Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Hullihan, Chief Executive Officer of Polarian Imaging. POLX is ticker there. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Happy to be with you, Justin, as always.
Yeah, and we're going to dig into why you did a very substantial fundraise and highly supported by existing shareholders, directors as well. We'll talk about that and where that's going to take you and what it's going to be used for. But before we do, as always, if you had to explain you know, Polarian to someone now who's not in the medical profession and you had to say why it's different, what it is about it, just summarize, how would you do that, Richard? How could you keep it simple for someone new to it?
Yes, exactly. And so I think the best way to do that is kind of right off of the title slide in the slide deck, and that is we are both literally and figuratively about breathtaking images, right? Mm-hmm. This is about using our inert noble gas contrast agent Xenon 129 in assessing pulmonary function quantitatively end-to-end for a pulmonologist. And that is, there's not a question that they can answer about what's going on inside your lungs that we can't answer. And we do that by using magnetic resonance imaging.
Mm-hmm. And just explain what's out there at the moment, because you know you've done a phase three trial, of course, that was a head to head. Explain what the alternative is for people who are going in for these for this analysis diagnostics. What do they have there available at the moment?
Sure. And so I think the kind of origin story for us is that in a very cruel twist of physics and physiology, pulmonary medicine was essentially left behind by the revolution that took place in most of the rest of medicine by the introduction of CT and then magnetic resonance imaging. So everything, oncology, cardiology, neurology, musculoskeletal imaging. I mean, if you walk into any of those clinicians' offices on a daily basis, you'll see thousand-slice studies up on displays where people are trying to do diagnosis or analysis of disease. Pulmonary medicine is still using technologies that, for the most part, are 100 years old, having to do with trying to assess expired breath. That's the technology called spirometry. Mm. And so we now bring all of the compelling power of three-dimensional non-invasive imaging to pulmonary medicine, and happily, because most of these patients are assessed recurrently by their doctors, happily using technologies that are not using radiation in any form, which is, I think, key if you're taking care of patients longitudinally.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, in fact, you mentioned the presentation there. I want to pick your brains on two of the slides in there, which are very interesting, I thought. But let's talk about the fundraising first of all. So you raised how much, and what's it going to be used for then, Richard?
Yep. So we raised £25 million. The placing was oversubscribed to both existing and new shareholders, happily. So very happy about that.
Yeah, yeah. And you're saying that it'll provide you with 18 months of cash runway. And more importantly, I suppose, it gets you past that FDA approval date, doesn't it? Or, well, I say approval, but on the 5th of October, I mean.
Yeah, it does. If you remember kind of our backstory here in capital raising, we've always called a milestone and raised the funds to achieve it. In the last raise, the title of that raise was to get to approval. And I think as we have approached that kind of impending date, our board has been encouraging us to work ahead on hitting that finish line, because it's also the starting line for commercialization. And so I think it became obvious that that to do that well, we needed to raise more money. And if you're launching a drug device combination into the high end of academic medicine in the U.S. market, that is an unforgiving place to not get an A. And so we've now raised the money to set ourselves up to do that.
Yeah, and it's quite reassuring, isn't it, I suppose, the level of support you got. And I mean, 25 million, less than an 8% discount, you know, with existing shareholders. I mean, that's quite reassuring, isn't it?
It is. And I think we're very gratified by that. We've seen other raises earlier this year in the city and are really quite happy with that outcome.
Yeah, and let's be honest, the people taking part in the raise, you know a bit about this industry, like the guys from Bracco, for example, and, at Massey. Yeah. So they're very experienced guys in this field, aren't they?
Yes, and they have come along with us now. And in this raise, we were also able to attract some of the larger funds that we had been calling on from the outset and were kind of not quite big enough, hadn't quite done enough yet to have earned their trust. And then in this round, many of them have come in. So very happy about that as well. It's been a wonderful expansion of the share register in that regard.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's say, I mean, there's no way of knowing. I mean, to me, you could say, some people I'm sure say it's nailed on, you've passed phase three, but let's say you get the approval from the FDA and going beyond that, you say launch and then commercialization. How does that look? What do you actually do there? I mean, where do you go after the approval?
That is a great question, and it is the object of all of our work at the moment. So, as a drug device, the regulatory framework precludes us from doing things like taking orders in advance. So, in contrast to kind of commerce at large and retail, where you can pre-sell things and then fill orders, we can't do that. So that is against the rules and can be quite a punitive activity to be caught out in. So, but what we can do is, using the clinical and scientific side of the business, we can begin the process of making presentations to pulmonologists and radiologists about the clinical use of the technology and creating the storyboards that explain a day in the use of this technology on patients for doctors. And so we're hard at work creating those storyboards, and they're very compelling. I couldn't be happier for how those things are developing.
Yeah, yeah, because you've got, so I don't know how many systems you have out there. Is it 20-something,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, we've got 24. Our most recent one, which we did RNS, was the delivery to MD Anderson, the global cancer research facility. They have a very special interest in this, which is, to a certain degree, an expansion kind of outside of pulmonary medicine into oncology. But it's about the use of the technology to assess the planning and progress of all therapies having to do with treating lung cancer. So, as you know, there are many ways to help a patient who has received this diagnosis. One of them is surgery. That was actually one of our clinical trial topics, lobe resection surgery. One of them is radiation therapy, and that's the delivery of radiation doses to tumors in a geometric span around the human body to minimize delivering dose to healthy tissue while maximizing the sum of all those doses at the tumor. And right now, that planning process is kind of an advanced problem in geometry, trying to design those ray paths. And then, of course, chemotherapy, which is delivering some kind of chemistry to the human body, which you know is not good for all of the body, and trying to manage that process process in quantity and time to get the highest benefit in killing the diseased cells, but not damage the healthy cells any more than absolutely necessary. And of course, that planning, for the most part, proceeds kind of in the time domain, using a calendar based on, you know, years of medical evidence. So if the object of all that is to preserve the highest degree of pulmonary function ex post those therapies, and many of them are now used in combination, wouldn't it be a compelling thing to do to be able to exactly assess pulmonary function globally yeah. within the lung? And the answer is yes, we think so. And those guys, and of course, the folks out at Oxford do this as well. And we think it's simply kind of a recent new development in the technology, taking it in an adjacent direction.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, it's one of the slides on your presentation there. I saw this, the study from Oxford University, studying lung imaging. And it's really a standout, you know, image there of COVID scarred lungs. And like you said, that, you know, it was a big market anyway, diseases that affect the lungs. But now, I mean, that there's so much evidence of long COVID, isn't there? I don't know how big the market has become all of a sudden.
Yes. Well, I think just for those, you know, for the agencies who track statistics, COVID patients are now, from a pulmonary function point of view, a segment as large as asthma, which is the largest single segment. And so, it's huge. It's unfortunately and desperately huge in that regard. The beauty of the Oxford study was that, you know, weeks after having recovered from having the virus, many patients, and of course there doesn't seem to be any grand unified theory of this at all. Things are happening in strangely illogical ways with respect to who succumbs, who doesn't, the depth of their state of disease, and their recovery or bounce back after the fact don't seem to have rhyme or reason yet. And so the ability to study the effects of this quantitatively across huge swaths of varying patient populations, we think will ultimately be quite important. And so what that study showed was that many weeks after the fact, and despite appearing normal in other techniques of evaluation, our technology clearly shows that the patients are not normal, and in particularly in the way that they gas exchange and transport gas in arterial blood flow, very much suffering from some form of dysfunction. So hopefully this leads to investigations in therapeutics, either on the front or back end. And clearly, if drug companies were to have existing drugs that might work for treating like symptoms present in other pulmonary diseases, we could certainly help with evaluating those things quantitatively in the most efficient way possible.
Yeah, well, you say that in another slide here, but you could simplify clinical trials, increase precision and lower costs. And there's two sort of bits of data circled on that thing about the number of patients needed. That's phenomenal there.
Yeah, it is. It's a startling thing. So everyone would know, and of course, even in the lay press, the scale and cost of drug clinical trials are staggering, right? Mm-hmm. Some of that is associated with the medical evidence that's being sought in the trial, but some of it is simply the precision and reproducibility of the tools that are being used as the endpoints in clinical trials. Mm-hmm. And so they're using the same technology that we began the discussion with, spirometry, which has a difficult profile with respect to its statistical reproducibility. And so if you compare ours versus theirs and simply hand that data to a biostatistician and say, for example, that you would like to run a trial to detect, say, a 2% difference in ventilation defect arising from a drug, hypothetically, and tell the statistician, I want a 90% confidence interval and I want a 0.05 alpha. Tell me, statistically how many subjects I would have to have in each trial. And on the slide, you can see it there in black and white. It's our case 24 and their case 25, their case 542. Mm. And so that's just numerically, that's a startling contrast. But if you then kind of turn around and transpose that into the cost domain, in our clinical trials, the subjects averaged something on the order of $60,000 or so a piece to do. So the other way to characterize that slide is, which would you rather spend, $1 million or 20 to get the answer yes or no to your question? And I think that's just a staggering difference in cost. And of course, that translates additionally into, I mean, it took us, you know, nearly a year to recruit our clinical trial with 80 patients. How long would it take, or how many institutions running in parallel would it take to recruit 542 patients? And the answer is a lot.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So, absolutely. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity to help kind of evaluate new drugs and respiratory pipelines globally, and we're exploring that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, just, I know we've gone over this before, but surely it's changing now and it's getting bigger. I mean, you talk about the market opportunity there. So, what is the opportunity? And have you is it possible to model for now long COVID or any COVID related disease or not?
Yeah, I think so. COVID patients and COVID as an epidemiological statement certainly has a unique profile. In terms of its effects on the human body, they fall into the same categories that all pulmonary disease does. And so we can label those images COVID. They could also be labeled something else. It's simply a demonstration of our ability to assess ventilation, gas exchange, and red blood cell transport after the fact and help clinicians understand what is happening here with respect to this disease.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so when you launch now, after assuming FDA approval, how do you know what demand you'll get? Because obviously you know what the potential market size is, I suppose, but have you any idea how much demand you'll get for your systems?
No, there isn't kind of a priori any real way to know. It's not something that you could, you know, for example, I can't conduct a market survey and ask people how many Polarian scans would you like. It's not quite that way. But what we can and do are commission group studies, mm-hmm. By creating advisory boards and putting both existing users and people new or naive to the technology together, and then ask them questions, medical questions in specific disease verticals, mm-hmm. and say, you know, here are the possibilities. Here are the things that we can do. Here are the things that we can't do. Ask them about the way that they currently treat patients, and then create dialogue between clinicians, mm-hmm. About their relative experiences in using the technology and how it might play as a day in the life of a pulmonologist, and then just take notes like crazy and analyze and digest all that. And out of that, we certainly will be creating models about which diseases, which patients, with what kinds or what states of disease might best be candidates for the instantaneous adoption of this technology. And we'll see how those theories play out as we get to market. There's always planning, and then there's always real life when it comes to medicine and how clinicians use tools, how patients play in those theories are all things that, you know, happen in the real world after the fact, and either confirm plans or become new models themselves.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose what you do know is that, like I said, pulmonary disease affects, what, nearly 40 million people in the U.S. and costs $150 billion. So that's
40 million pre-COVID, that's now 65. So, wow. So it's a shocking quantity of money. And again, just like the story on clinical trials, why do they cost so much? Why do they take so long? And the answer is because of the tools that are presently being used. So I think we look forward to an outright opportunity in an evidence-based medicine sort of way to help healthcare get their arms around this and spend the money in the highest value way on taking care of these patients.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that's, so it's gone from $40 million to $65 million, and that's just in the U.S., isn't it, you know?
And in a single year, right? I mean, that's a stunning, that's a stunning shift, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And just one question. I've had quite a few people saying, you know, questioning why you changed broker. And I know Steve and Nicholas are quite a big broker. And so what is that? What advantage is that for you, is switching to broker to those, Richard?
Yeah, well, I think it's an old story. I think many businesses go through this evolution. Mm-hmm. There are segments of the investment community market to call on in London, and then gradually as entities grow in scale and or in the markets they face, they kind of inevitably wind up moving up towards larger markets or larger brokers with bigger windows into markets. And that's exactly what happened in our case. And I would say in a perfectly natural sort of way and to a wonderful outcome. So I'm very happy about all this.
Yeah, exactly. And like you say, you are in America, you're targeting commercially America first, the US. And would you, you must have considered a listing there or is that on the, is that in discussion?
Well, I think in the context of, you know, well-trodden paths, of course, even just locally there on AIM in London, this is not a sequence of events that would be unexpected. Right now, I think our advice, even from Stifel, is we're a long way from having exhausted London capital markets. But we are, a U.S. company. We're domiciled in the U.S., our first addressable market in the U.S. I think in the longer term, it probably makes sense that we would come here to raise money for any next new big adventure in our story here. Mm-hmm. But all part of the bigger picture consideration.
Yeah, it's all on the table. Marvellous stuff. Richard, as always, if you could, three reasons then. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what they're hearing, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, so we are the only non-invasive, quantitative, end-to-end assessment of pulmonary function tool that does so reproducibly and without radiation. We are a proven technology. We have 24 systems out there operating in some of the best and brightest academic institutions in the world, having generated 1,000 peer-reviewed journal articles by now. And then finally, we have a demonstrated track record for delivering on milestones and communicating with investors about that.
Excellent stuff, Richard. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time, Justin. As always.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, PayLater, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.